Matt Leiner, and you're listening to Reign of Troy Radio.
Reign of Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Sam Darnold, one cool customer, or what?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain it, what I'm feeling right now, guys.
Oh, I can't breathe. USC are the Rose Bowl champs.
All right, Trojan fans, turn up the volume. It's time for Reign of Troy Radio. Here's your host, Michael Castillo.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Reign of Troy Radio, episode 252, coming to you on Wednesday, April 25th. We are going to preview the NFL draft, which is on Thursday. Talk about the Trojans participating, or at least hoping to participate, including Sam Darnold. Will he go number one? Will he not go number one? That is a big question. We're going to talk about it around this episode. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Reign of Troy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Reign of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Google Play, and Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Reign of Troy. Our email address is reignoftroy@fansided.com, and our phone number is 213-373-1872. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host, Alicia Derrito.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Alicia. I'm so excited for this week. You have no idea, because it is the end of NFL draft season.
You're not here for all the mock drafts and all the speculation.
And it's terrible because we're going to talk about that stuff. So I kind of have to be here for it at some point. But I'm not a fan of it, because it annoys me that I think there's a lot of it in which people judge people's college careers by their NFL prospects. And I hate that. That's the thing I hate. So-and-so, he's really garbage. Like, no, he was a good college player. He might not be cut out for the NFL. That doesn't mean that he's garbage. It means he's not cut out for the NFL, whoever that is.
Yeah, well, I mean, great college players aren't necessarily built for the NFL, and great players in the NFL that doesn't mean that they were great in college as well. Like, it sort of, I think the two do get wrapped up in each other sometimes. But really, what I like with the NFL draft stuff, like, I too don't like the lead up. I don't like all the speculation and stuff like that. What I never understand is how you have all this stuff going on going into the draft, and then like the week after the draft, like, I feel like just gets lost. Like, no one ever talks about like things that actually happen. Like, for me, it's the fallout from the draft that's so much more important than these needless 4 months of speculation and sort of like micro analyzing, you know, every little muscle in a face about trying to figure out what the mental makeup of a guy is, or, you know, who's a diva.
Well,
and who's not.
Thing. It's the revisionist history of things. One USC hopeful draftee who's been labeled a diva.
Yeah.
And it's like, what?
Like, what?
Where's that coming from? The yeah. whole thing about Josh Rosen annoys me.
Oh, the Josh Rosen stuff is such...
Especially because that Josh Rosen stuff, I think, was valid coming out of Elite 11, and then he got to college and that was all that stuff didn't matter, and he proved that it didn't matter. He's a good quarterback when healthy. That's what matters for him.
Yeah, and his teammates, you know, go to bat for him in general. And it's now interesting seeing the way that Josh Rosen is treated right now, because there's the new article in the Atlantic about JT Daniels.
The Athletic,
yes. Same difference. all A publications. The Athletic had an interview with JT Daniels, and JT Daniels, I think, has avoided some of the Josh Rosen sort of persona kind of questions that are coming on. But like, JT Daniels is also a guy who's very much in his head and very much beyond football kind of thinking. And you just sort of wonder, like, is JT Daniels going to end up with this kind of same label that Josh Rosen is getting, like the thinking man who can't possibly care about football? Like, get out of here. Like, all this
stuff
is
so stupid, because
just...
they want you to think. They don't want you to be dumb. So they want you to be able to read defenses and all that stuff and be a whiz, but you can't be too smart.
Yeah.
Can't be too dumb, can't be too smart. So it's completely stupid. So that's what we're going to talk about this episode. So, but there's other stuff coming at you this week. We have, if you're into off-topic stuff, we recorded the very first, I know, Westwood on Westworld. We recorded our first episode with our friend Jake Merrifield over at the What's Bruin Show. You can go listen to it on the What's Bruin Show's feed on iTunes and Podomatic and Stitcher and all that stuff. Or if you're a subscriber to us on Patreon, you get it in there too. So go listen to that if you want to hear our thoughts on the TV show Westworld. And also, if you're on Patreon, you will notice a new episode which dropped yesterday. It's Robot's Choice, in which we talk about what we are and aren't looking forward to this year in 2018, the 2018 college football season, and give you a little bit of a preview at the end of this episode.
Yeah, that was a really fun one to put together in the weird way that it's always funny how it's easier to come up with things that I'm not looking forward to this season than things that I am.
Pessimistic Alicia is out in full force.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't want to be, but at this stage of the offseason, I always find myself just sort of like, I really want football to be back, but there's other things in the periphery that I would rather not have to deal with as well, so... That's always the way it goes, but the excitement will come back.
Yeah, if you want to see the both optimistic and pessimistic side of Alicia and me as well, go listen to our latest Robot's Choice over at Patreon. You can subscribe to us on Patreon, patreon.com/reignoftroy, for as little as $5.55 a month, or you can go up to $10 and join our Rot Crew and our Slack community as well. Alicia, though, there's a lot of stuff to get to in this episode about the NFL draft, so let's get to that up next. All right, let's do it. Let's talk about the NFL draft. Let's go person by person, player by player, potential draftee by potential draftee, NFL prospect by NFL prospect. Future progen, as much as I hate that word. I know you love that word. I hate that so much.
I wouldn't go so far as to say I love that word, but I accept that word and use it.
I only like that word on Twitter because it shortens what, like, a progen is only, what, six letters, and it's very different than former USC football player.
Yeah, former USC football player is a mouthful. Yeah, but it's not a great word. I'll say it's not a very attractive word, but it gets the job done. So it's I see the utility in it.
It's better than collie. I'll give you that a little bit. But let's talk about Sam Darnold. Definitely someone who is potentially going to go number one overall to the Cleveland Browns. And it's interesting because SC has not had a number one overall draft pick since the 2003 draft, when Carson Palmer was picked after his 2002 Heisman season, went to the Cincinnati Bengals. He sat the entire first year. And yet here we are looking, and if Sam Darnold's picked by the Browns, there's no doubt that he's going to play in year one. Like, the whole landscape of the transition from college football to the NFL has completely changed in the last 15 years. And to me, that's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm a big proponent of the way it used to be, where any quarterback who was drafted at any point would more than likely sit for not just 1 year, but, you know, potentially two or three. You would let him learn and develop and grow, and then you'd throw him into the fire. And now everyone's getting thrown into the fire immediately. And it's really, like, you look at, like, Jared Goff. Like, Jared Goff got a lot of stick because they weren't going to throw him into the fire immediately. But I think it's a little bit of a crapshoot for these young quarterbacks, because I think it's really easy to ruin a quarterback, unfortunately. And I feel like the NFL does that a lot now, where they ruin young quarterbacks. And that's why you see teams like the Browns end up with, I mean, I don't even know number.
Good thing the Browns are there to.
Yeah.
Definitely. They've never ruined a
quarterback.
What is it, like
30-something quarterbacks, like, in the last, like, 10 years?
Something like that. It's really
depressing.
Something's
ridiculous. But, and the Jets are quarterback ruiners, and, you know, I don't know.
They are and they aren't, though, because I feel like the Jets have just perpetually had, like, middling journeyman quarterbacks.
Well, the Jets
It's always the Fitzpatricks, the whatevers of the world. Those guys. It's always those type of guys, right?
I don't think they do a very good job of picking quarterbacks. I think you're actually cottoning on to something that's probably true there. They very much like their middle of the road to not good quarterbacks. And I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll see. That this draft is so interesting because so many of these of the top four could end up deciding to take the quarterback, and there are many intriguing quarterbacks on the board. So you could end up in a situation where the Jets take, you know, end up with their middle of the road quarterback because they get the third guy off the board. But who knows?
Yeah, let's talk about what it means for Sam Darnold. If you look at the mock drafts, Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network has him going number one overall to the Browns. Peter King of SI, number one overall to the Browns. Pete Prisco, CBS, number two overall to the New York Giants. Mel Kiper, number three overall to the New York Jets. And Walter Cherpinski from WalterFootball.com has him going fourth overall to the Buffalo Bills via a trade, which I think is interesting because you look at all these teams, what do they have all in common?
It seems unlikely that Sam Darnold or any of these quarterbacks is going to end up on the West Coast, which may say something about where the teams out this way are settled at quarterback. I don't know. I think it's the narrative around Darnold and the number one overall pick and all that has been fascinating to watch the trend, the way that it's gone. Cause like one day you're, you know, at USC's pro day and everyone's saying, yep, that's that. Browns done deal. And then like the very next week, it's like all of a sudden, oh, we're hearing it's Josh Allen. And then the next week it's like, well, no, actually, it's still Darnold. And then it just keeps going back and forth, and it's really become
earlier
the two-horse.
Earlier this week, it's Baker Mayfield is still in the mix for the Browns.
In the discussion, yeah. And I don't know how much of that is like smoke screens or whatever, but because the Browns having two top five picks, one and four, I wonder how much of that sort of they want to obscure what they're going to do because trade opportunities and sort of, you know, figuring out if they're going to take a running back with one of these picks and all that kind of stuff. I can understand why they don't want people to know, but I'm basically just sitting here hoping to end all hope that the Browns do that thing where they go all in on Josh Allen and spare Sam Darnold the indignity of having to be one of the, you know, the 57th quarterback that the Browns end up, you know, playing for three games and then, you know, nixing because the Browns are the Browns.
Here's the thing, though. I feel like the Browns, not completely, but it's kind of like the whole situation with the Cubs in the sense that whoever wanted to manage the Cubs always wanted to manage the Cubs because the thought of if you win a World Series there will be a statue outside on Waveland of you. And yet, you look at the Browns, if Darnold is the guy for Cleveland, he literally will be a freaking god there. Like,
yeah.
In the pantheon of Cleveland sports, it'll be LeBron, Bob Feller, and Darnold right there.
Yeah, but he'd have to do it first. And I'm convinced, I'm genuinely convinced, and I hate to say this because it could be Darnold. I'm genuinely convinced whoever is the number one overall pick in this year's draft will be a bust. And it's not necessarily because of them. It's because I do not trust that franchise to foster a young quarterback. And I don't trust that franchise to put the pieces around the young quarterback that they pick. And like Darnold may have as good a shot as anybody of having success in Cleveland, but it's still such an uphill climb for me. And maybe I'm being unfair to the Browns because they do have, you know, new setup and all of that kind of stuff. But
I mean, not completely. Hugh Jackson's still there.
Hugh Jackson's still there. They've redone their front office and are sort of trying to, I don't know. I feel like, I mean, you referenced the Cubs, right? Like, I feel like this is like, you're going to love this. Like the Cubs, I mean, the Browns want to like major league it where
they did that last time. They hired baseball guys and they got rid of all of them.
Yeah, but that I feel like that's what they just keep trying to go in and say, we're going to find the revolutionary new way to, maybe it's not major league it. Maybe it's not, because it's not Moneyball either, but like the idea of you need a gimmick.
Well, they were going the Moneyball way because Dee Podesta was in their front office and Dee Podesta was in Moneyball. So, I mean, you were right on the nose there, but I don't know. I'm so torn because there's part of me that wants him to go to Cleveland strictly for the fact that I would love to see Sam Darnold and Saquon Barkley in the same backfield. Like, the thought of that would be so much fun. And if he's there with Corey Coleman, Josh Gordon, you know, those are guys that are interesting at receiver. And I think he has a chance to do something. And then you think about it for a second. This is the Browns we're talking about.
Yeah.
We're talking about the Browns.
That's the big problem here. And I agree with you. Like, I think it would be really cool if Darnold came in and was that guy for the Browns and was able to sort of make that name for himself by making the Browns relevant. Like, that would be the coolest storyline.
And they do have Tyrod Taylor, so they wouldn't have to start him in week one. Which leads us to our question that we have written down here. Do you want him to go number one? That's the first part of the question. And if not, where do you actually want him to go? Because I think there's two different things. You could want him to go to number one because it looks good for USC and it's a good, you know, thing in the USC media guide. But if it's not the Browns that you want him to go to, or you don't want the pressure of number one, then that would change your answer there.
Well, I want him to go number one because I want USC to go ahead of Notre Dame and Auburn for all-time first number one overall picks. So for that reason, I want him to go number one overall. Definitely don't want him going to the Browns, though. I think if he were... The silver lining of not getting pick number one is that I think then there's a good chance that the Giants take the chance on him at number two. And I think the Giants are a great situation for a guy like Darnold. You can go in and a semi-competent organization with the Giants. They're not the Jets. It's a big media market, which I know there's a lot of pressure, but it would be a good landing spot that's not the Jets again. And Eli Manning is still there. So you talk about Tyrod Taylor being a reason why he wouldn't need to start right away with the Browns. Eli Manning being there means that he could sit and learn from a veteran who's had success in the league and take his time and be able to go up in that organization and not have to get thrown into the fire right away. So I think the best case scenario for Darnold here is to have the Browns make a huge mistake by drafting Josh Allen and letting Darnold
fall. Or Baker Mayfield.
Well,
I'd rather have Mayfield than Allen, but I still don't see any of them panning out in the NFL. And maybe that's just dumb me because I'm looking at height and stupid stuff and I'm looking at accuracy and I'm falling into the NFL trap. Maybe that's what I'm doing. But I don't like Allen because he wasn't a good college quarterback. And I don't like Baker Mayfield as a pro prospect just because I don't know that his style will transition. And again, maybe that's just stupid me.
No, I agree. I think the reason picking Josh Allen would be a bigger mistake for the Browns because Josh Allen is not people are falling in love with tangibles like that haven't they learned from past mistakes, that kind of thing. With Baker Mayfield, I agree with you. I think Baker Mayfield getting picked by the Browns still probably doesn't end in success. Because Baker Mayfield needs to land with a team that isn't the Browns in order for him to have success. Like, Baker Mayfield could be that guy who ends up going to, I don't even know what equivalent team it would be, but like a team where he ends up sitting for 3 or 4 years and then comes up and, I mean, maybe it's like the Saints. Like, maybe, like, I feel like Baker Mayfield gets the Drew Brees comparison because of the height thing, but.
But I could see him in an offense that doesn't need him to be the superstar.
Yeah, and the Browns need a superstar.
And allows him to be that guy and allows him to be the Russell Wilson because Russell Wilson came to be in Seattle by not being that superstar. And Russell Wilson is a superstar because he's a quarterback. I don't think he's a superstar in how necessarily he plays. And I know that sounds absolutely absurd
but that makes perfect sense to me too.
In the sense that, like, if you look at Cam Newton plays, his game is what you would expect from a superstar. To me, Russell Wilson's game is very conservative and vanilla. For as much as he does, gets out of the pocket, he does all the things you want to do, he's not that sexy quarterback you see on posters of NFL draft guys drilling over. Mind you, part of that is because they overlook guys like him all the time, and those guys have value, and Baker Mayfield can have value like that. But I think that he needs to be in a situation where it's a good team around him, if that makes sense. That just makes me more comfortable if I'm picking Baker Mayfield. Like, you're right. I don't want him to be the Browns guy. If I'm the Browns and I'm taking a quarterback, I'm taking Darnold or Rosen. If I'm, you know, somebody else, if I'm a team that's loaded, like if I'm a team that's the Patriots, maybe I take Josh Allen because I can get him to work in my system. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I agree. But I think the... the issue is the fit of all of these quarterbacks, and they're all right. so different. The fits would be very, very different, which is why it doesn't make sense to me that the Browns have been linked with all of these guys, because the fits are so different. Like, the quarterback that the Browns need is Sam Darnold. And I'm saying this as somebody who I'm not 100% sure that
more
Darnold
so than Rosen, because I still think Rosen's a better NFL prospect.
I could see that. I could see if it's not Darnold, then Rosen makes a hell of a lot more sense than Mayfield or Allen for me. And I'm saying that as someone who I'm not 100% convinced that Darnold will be an unmitigated success in the NFL. I think I still worry about his turnover proneness, and you throw him onto the Browns and that just scares the crap out of me, because I want Darnold to end up in a good situation too, just like Baker Mayfield would have a better chance of success if he ends up in a good situation.
Darnold, but if you look at Darnold, the positive is, I mean, the high end is he turns into Brett Favre.
Yeah.
And on the low end, maybe he's Jay Cutler or a poor man's Jay Cutler, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah.
Whereas someone like Rosen is either Peyton Manning or he's Ryan Leaf. So are you saying that the ceiling is, that the floor for Darnold is higher than these other guys? Is that what you're saying? Because I don't necessarily know that that's the case either.
No, it's not that the floor for Darnold.
I think Rosen
Darnold
is the higher floor.
I don't think Darnold's floor is any higher than Rosen's or any of those other guys. I just think that the style of quarterback that he is, he's the superstar quarterback. He's the guy who makes the big play. He's the Aaron Rodgers. If that's the kind of profile of quarterback that you're looking for, I don't think Josh Allen is that guy. I don't think even Josh Rosen is that guy. Josh Rosen is much more that Peyton Manning, where Peyton Manning's superstardom is so weird, like, because as a quarterback,
just strictly a passer.
Yeah, but strictly a passer and like not a like jaw dropping spectacular one at that. He just was like he.
It's
out-
good we don't have an NFL podcast, because I feel like these are just hot takes that
A lot of these are hot takes. I don't know. I feel like Peyton Manning beat people with his brain.
Sure.
More so than with like spectacular throws into tiny little windows.
Right.
All, like,
part of it was because he had that herky jerky motion. He wasn't a pretty quarterback, and that's not. I'm not just talking about his face and his 8 head, but just like the way he played was not beautiful.
Yeah,
it
exactly.
It worked, and yes. It was really good at how
it
worked.
Extremely effective. Yes.
Yeah. So, But to get back to the question, to me, yeah, I want Darnold to go number one because I think it would be cool. But I think that if we're talking about where I would rather see him, probably the Giants. And I think that if you're a Josh Rosen fan, too, you're probably thinking the same thing about the Giants, too. Because if you're the way I look at it, you look at the teams with picks in the top five, Browns, Giants, Jets, Browns, Broncos. We know that the Broncos pick at number five is, quote, up for sale, according to Adam Schefter. So that could be anyone that slots in there. Maybe the Arizona Cardinals. That would be a cool place for Sam Darnold to go. That's where Carson Palmer thrived at the end of his career. Then again, that's where Matt Leinart went and didn't pan out. But I think what's the difference between all those teams? All those teams are historically bad. Browns, Jets, Browns again. I mean, the Browns are there twice, but the Browns and the Jets have been historically bad, and they have a bad rap. The Giants don't. The Broncos don't.
The Giants feel like they just had a blip.
The Broncos are not picking a quarterback. But you look at the Giants. The Giants are never this bad, which means, in my mind, they have to take a quarterback, because you're never going to be in a draft that has this many quarterbacks with that good of a pick again at this stage in Eli Manning's career. Strike while the iron's hot and pick a quarterback. But that's been a contention for them. They might end up taking Saquon Barkley. I remember that, you know, last year at the Coliseum, the Giants had someone in one or two people, just like the Jets, at like every single game. So they definitely have a book on Darnold and Rosen. It's just a matter of if they pick one of them. But either way, that's where I would want to go if I was any of these quarterbacks.
Oh yeah, 100%. Easily the best landing spot of those opening five picks. The Broncos would be a good landing spot for a quarterback too, but that's not necessarily in the cards. They're not necessarily interested in that. So 100% the Giants.
Let's say that Darnold slides. He's still available at five. The Cardinals trade in and pick him. Is that a better spot than the Giants?
Is it?
I don't know. I think it might be if Arians was around.
I feel like they're sort of on
Fitz is at the end
similar...
of his career. They have David Johnson, yeah. Who's still young. I don't know. Either way, let's get to one discussion question that I wrote down here, which I really wanted to get to. Last year at this time, Sam Darnold was the sexy favorite to go number one in this year's draft. He still is today. Like, nothing has changed. So does that mean his rocky 2017 season didn't matter? Because I know a lot of people, I listened to Solid Verbal, they talked about it heavily there, and the idea of, well, you know, Darnold is dumb decision prone and all these kind of things. He turns the ball over all the time. Does that really matter? His draft stock today is the same as it was a year ago.
I think it does. I think it does matter. And it's because we're sitting here talking about the possibility of the Browns going with Josh Allen. And to be fair, Josh Allen is the kind of quarterback who was going to have people fall in love with his arm no matter what. So maybe this happens either way. But I think that if Darnold has a steadier 2017 season, if he doesn't turn the ball over as often as he did, if he doesn't have these massive questions over his fumbling and the interceptions early in the season, then I think he's already got a contract in hand from the Cleveland
Browns.
Maybe,
but like, I think Josh Allen's the bad example there. Josh Allen was terrible last year at Wyoming.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. His arm was always going to be, like, Darnold's attributes were always going to keep him up there, regardless of what happened in the season. It's about how firmly, or I guess how cloudy the picture with the quarterback still looks. Because if Darnold has a good season, I genuinely think, like, he's the undisputed number one, as opposed to this, well, he might be number one, but we're not sure, and maybe, and there's going back and forth, and going into the draft season, it was, you know, a three-man race and all that kind of, like, I don't think that's even being talked about if he had a better season. So it doesn't really matter, but it kind of matters.
But he's still in the same spot. He's still in the same spot.
He could still end up in the same spot.
So I the way I look at it is, I don't know that it really mattered, because I think what people do is people go to your best moment and your worst moment and focus on those, and they decide which one they like better. And I think people like that fourth quarter of the Rose Bowl still more so than, I don't know, the Oregon State game, the Notre Dame game.
And Sam Darnold just blew us away.
Yeah, Clark agrees. So, hey, maybe we'll go to the Falcons. You never know. Anyways, a lot more USC potential draftees to discuss. Let's get to Ronald Jones and all of them up next. All right, Lisa, let's get into the other guys outside of Darnold, the guys who might not go in the first round, probably won't go in the first round. Start with Ronald Jones. He is someone I have said I think he is guaranteed to have a great NFL career, which might be stupid because I've said this about two other players in my lifetime. One of them did not pan out. The other one, his script is still being written in Leonard Williams, but I said it about Mike Williams too. Didn't work for Mike Williams. I'm pretty confident and Ronald Jones, because I still think he is no worse than the second best running back in this class behind Saquon Barkley. And yet you look at it, and he's someone who's getting second round grades by all the mock drafts. But there's these questions around him suddenly. I mean, Mel Kiper has him second round of the Colts. Trpinski has him second round to the Colts. Charlie Campbell of Walter Football also has him second round to the Redskins. But yet you see this NFL draft profile over at ESPN, which references, quote, multiple scouts voice concern about his diva qualities. So what does that mean for him? I know that there was a report a couple months ago about how he was a little, you know, a little too lax for some teams. I think at the combine, a little too laid back. Is that laid backness being turned into diva, or is this diva thing something else that we just don't even know about? Or does it go back to him nearly leaving USC because he was homesick? Like, what is this? Because it makes no damn sense to me.
Yeah, diva is definitely not a word I've ever associated with Ronald Jones.
No.
So I was caught off guard when I saw it. And I was caught off guard by, well, not, I wasn't caught off guard by the combine reports, because that made sense to me, having interviewed Rojo. I kind of got where someone could have that. He's very shruggy. Like, you ask him a question, he's just like, kind of like do the head tilt and like go like, nah, well, yeah. He'll give you an answer, but he's very sort of noncommittal about a lot of things and sort of very shruggy and whatever. Very, very laid back. So, like, I got that. But the idea that he's a diva, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess scouts talk to teammates and they talk to, like, staffers and that kind of stuff to try and get the inside scoop on guys. So maybe there's something going on behind the scenes with Rojo about that he's a diva, or because I don't even know what diva means in reference to a football player if they're not a wide receiver.
I feel like if he was a diva, he wouldn't have had an amazing junior year in which he completely changed his running style. Because to me, that shows how hard of a worker he is.
He seems
coachable.
Which
is like the opposite of being a diva. Yeah. I don't know. Like, he was someone who's improved his game. He improved his ability to block. He's improved his ability to catch. He improved his ability to shake defenders and drag guys. I mean, just go back and watch the Western Michigan film. How many guys he was carrying on that first run of the year, which I kind of think is his greatest run of all time, even though it wasn't a touchdown. You go watch that kind of stuff. And I know that that's just, you know, play on the field and the diva stuff is off the field. But that on-field performance was a product of everything he did off the field.
Yeah, that's what I totally agree. He seemed to put his head down and work hard. And that, I think that's part of why this diva claim is just so jarring and weird. But at the same time, there was a report from I don't remember the radio show, but who was saying that he would, you know, he was making the prediction that Rojo would go in the first round, that there were teams that were going to trade up for him, that the Colts would trade up, and that the Browns were thinking about trading up if the Browns don't go with Saquon Barkley, that there's talk that the Browns could trade up back up into the
end. Darnold and Rojo together? Hey.
I mean, if we're talking about like dream scenarios, that could convince me. That could convince me that it's okay for Darnold to go to the Browns if the Browns then pass on, or let's say that
as long as
Darnold,
they don't play Ohio State.
Well, yeah,
or ever play in Dallas.
No more playing in Dallas. Yeah, AT&T Stadium is just not a good place for them. But you know, like there are these little murmurings of there's attitude questions around him, but at the same time, his stock hasn't really dropped from where it was. He's always sort of been a second round kind of guy, and there is talk that he could end up in the first round. So as for what it means to him, I don't know that it matters. I don't know. This definitely isn't the kind of thing where you're not going to take him because I don't think there are any solid examples of diva behavior from him enough to say that, yeah, this is a real red flag.
The way I see it, if he was a diva, we would have known about it because
that's,
I think we would have known about it because of the situations he was in. He's someone who, if he was a diva, he would have made it clear, I think clearer and more public about his frustrations of not getting carries, of not getting people to block for him. And I know he was frustrated after losses, but it never came off as I'm a diva. It came off as I was hyper competitive.
Which should be it's supposed to be a good trait for the NFL,
yeah,
allegedly.
To me, to make the hockey comparison, if anything, it's a little Drew Doughty-ish. Maybe not as, you know, aggressive and, you know, complaining as Drew Doughty, but I don't think Drew Doughty is a diva. I think Drew Doughty is someone who's very competitive, and competitive is what you want. You don't want someone who whines. You don't want someone who complains. You don't want someone who puts themselves over anybody else, and I don't think that's who Ronald Jones is. Let's move on, though, after potential second rounder, maybe first rounder, Ronald Jones, and talk about Rashim Green. He's been put in mock drafts by Mel Kiper, second round to the Falcons, fourth round by Walter Football to the Packers by Walter Chapinski, but Charlie Campbell from Walter Football says second round to the Raiders. All that stuff feels about right to me. Second to fourth rounder seems about right to me.
Yeah, see, just day two is really what, if you had asked me to sort of sum up Rashim Green's draft prospects, day two seems about right. He's just a guy with a lot of raw talent that was always going to get him noticed, but still has some work. I mean, I thought it was really interesting. On NFL.com, they have the draft profiles. They quoted a a scout from an AFC team that said, I wanted him to go back to school because he probably would have been a top 10 pick next year. He's not strong enough to handle NFL guys yet, so this year might be a redshirt year for him. He's got some serious juice, though, and he's going to be a dude when it all comes together. I think that pretty much sums up Rasheem Green. Like, he's a second rounder on that pure five-star potential alone. You just look at him and wish, man, I wish you were first rounder. I wish you were that one step closer. And I'm left sort of reading that quote, left wondering, like, did he make the right decision? Like, should he have come back?
I think he definitely could have. I think you can make that case. But I think you can also look at it from the NFL perspective. If he goes in the fourth rounds, doesn't that also give you hope, though? If he lands in the right system with a team who will be patient for him to develop, if this is the case and that he still needs to develop more, and if he lands in the right system, that maybe he will outperform that, you know, fourth round pick that he is.
Yeah, well, and I think that's the best argument for underclassmen leaving for the NFL for me is if they're day two or better. So we're talking, you know, first, second, or third round kind of guys. Right. If you're in that range, even if you're not ready for the NFL, chances are you're going to end up with a team that's going to put in enough of an investment in you because they've invested the third, second, or first round pick in you, that a redshirt year in the NFL is just as valuable as coming back to school for another year to develop under somebody else. So you might as well pick up Rasheem Green now and get him in your system and get him with your coaches and get him developing the way you want him to develop. And it really could work out for him in the end.
Because you're saying that if they pick him in the sixth round, they won't have invested that much in him. So there's not enough skin in the game for them. And if they need to cut bait when he doesn't perform, they can do it.
Yeah, exactly. So like, okay. you don't redshirt a sixth round player. You just move on. But you can redshirt a second round player. And if Rasheem Green felt confident enough that he was going to be third or second rounder and be assured of that sort of redshirt option, then I suppose it makes sense for him to have left. It's almost the same thing with like Darnold, where if you're going to be a first round pick anyways, coming back for another year of development that you probably need.
I look at it two ways because, I think Rasheem Green would be a much better player if he came back and then left, you know, as a senior. And I think Darnold would be a much better player, too. But if you're looking at the end game, if you're looking at this 10 years from now, will there be a difference? Maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was getting at.
Yeah. So another guy who's wanting to go day two. Let's talk about Uchenna Nwosu, All-American Uchenna Nwosu. Mel Kiper has him going in the second round to Jacksonville. And I just will say right now, if that happens, I will buy a Nwosu jersey as soon as they go on sale. Just saying. Just putting that out there.
I got to admit, I saw that pick from Mel Kiper and my heart went a flutter a little bit because Chenna with the Jacksonville Jaguars just sounds beautiful to me.
That defense
is legit. Mm-hmm. The
great thing about that defense is it's like a college all-star team.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, 100%.
Love about that defense. You got Jalen Ramsey. You got Miles Jack. You got all these guys that were fun to watch in college.
And they're doing well in the pros. And that's a team on the rise. That's a team that seems to have its stuff together now. And Uchenna could go in and be the hybrid kind of player that he is without the pressure to be... Like, he wouldn't have to be an every down linebacker.
Opposite Dante Fowler, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you could just see him being used well there. So, officially put me down as I'm super invested in Mel Kiper being right about that pick, which is not a good place to be because mock drafts are never right.
But it would be awesome. The other places that he could potentially land, according to these mock drafts, Walter from Walter Football says third round to the Orange County Chargers. Charlie Campbell from Walter Football says fourth round to the Bills. Jags, best option there. But let's talk about Uchenna. He was someone who I remember last year, Daniel Jeremiah was talking last spring that SC was selling him hard as a first rounder and that he didn't see it. And yet here we are after last season, and Jenner was amazing last year. And yet he's not someone who has a first round grade. So was first rounder just never in the cards? Is that just, was there anything he could have done to be a first rounder? Is he just not going to be that guy? Is he not quick enough? Like, what, is he just going to have to be okay with being a day two guy?
I think so. I think he was always a guy that was, you know, in the past they called them tweeners, linebackers like Chenna. I think now they call them hybrids, which I think he's in the right era right now in the NFL of the way that they're treating defenders now, where they're more willing to take a guy. But Chenna was always going to be a guy who his versatility might work against him because he doesn't. It's hard to see exactly where he fits 100%.
Kind of like the Sua Cravens,
yeah,
issue. Yeah,
a little bit. Yeah. So, he probably could have tested better. He tested well at the combine. He tested well at pro day. He probably could have tested better, and that would have helped him get up there. But I think he was always going to have his limitations as far as NFL prototypical kind of things that go into who is first round and who's not.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about Deonte Burnett, someone who made a big decision to not come back. He jumped to the NFL early, and he's someone who might want that decision back, maybe, maybe not, because he's got 2 fifth-round grades in mock drafts, both by Walter Football. They're like the only ones that go all the way 7 rounds of mock drafts. Walter Football says 5th round to the Vikings. And Charlie from Walter Football says 5th round to the Seahawks. Did he jump too early? I know he had that issue of, you know, the hamstring injury kept him out of the running at the combine. He did run a 4.7 40 at pro day. Should he have come back?
Well, it wasn't at USC's first pro day. It was the sort of pro day 2.0 when I think they had Rojo and Deonte run, and he still wasn't 100% from that hamstring. Or at least you would hope he wasn't 100% if he was running a 4.7. That is not a good time for a slot receiver. I thought it was strange that Burnett made the decision to leave in the first place. I think obviously the hamstring injury, he couldn't have foreseen that was going to get in the way of his draft prep. So I'll give him a pass there. But at the same time, the more I thought about it, the more I read into some of the evaluations of him, the evaluations all come back to he's just small. He's small.
Yeah. And if you can get around that, he's your guy.
He doesn't flash physically. His physical, like, there's a reason he was a 3-star prospect coming out of high school, because he didn't have those sort of like those tangible physical assets that people always look for.
Right. He's built like Christian Kirk, but he doesn't have the Christian Kirk qualities.
Yeah, exactly. So, and this might be a weird comparison, but the more I thought about it, the more I wonder if Deonte Burnett is kind of in a Nickell Robey situation.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say, in the sense that I think you can make the case that he should have come back, and you can make the case that he should have gone, strictly for the Nickell Robey thing. Nickell Robey's draft stock was what it was. He was an undersized guy. If he was going to come back, he might have like moved up to the 5th round or something. But those black marks were black marks on his draft stock no matter what. So no matter what, Deonte Burnett was not going to get faster. He was not going to get stronger. He was not going to get bigger. He was not going to get any of that stuff. He wasn't going to move up because of that. He could have worked on his game a little bit better, but I think his game is where he thrives. And I think the other thing you have to look at it is you look at USC's receiving core. Michael Pittman's there. Tyler Vaughns is there. Those are two guys who are going to be taking a lot of his catches away. And can he still turn heads if he has, 60 catches this year if he were to come back rather than 80 catches? You know what I mean? Like he would have dialed it back a little bit. So it made sense. I think that he could have easily come back, but there were arguments both directions.
Yeah, and I think it goes both directions in those cases. It can't hurt really to come back and solidify your legacy at the college level, but it also is not going to help you. So it really is just going to come down to how committed to being in school are you? And some guys are really committed to, they love the college experience and they want to keep it going and all that. And I understand that. Some guys just feel like they're ready to just go on and be a professional. And I got that sense from Deontay that it was just, he just felt like he was ready to go. And so.
See, that's weird because I always felt like he was a college player to me. I always thought he was coming back.
Well, I thought he was coming back too. I think he's built for college, built for the college game, built to thrive in the college game. But the way he approached the game, the business-like way that he just went about his business quietly and got put his head down and did all of this stuff, like, it doesn't surprise me that he's just ready to go about and do his business in the NFL and put his head down and quietly.
And he's not deterred and scared of it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's talk about another wide receiver, though. Steven Mitchell. He's someone who puts up a lot of good numbers running-wise. I think it was like in a 4.39. We don't have it written down, but I think it was a 4.39 that he ran at Pro Day, and that's on a couple of two ACL surgeries. So who knows how fast he could have been without those. But Lance Zierlein of NFL.com projects him as a seventh-rounder or an undrafted free agent, which will be the theme from here going on out. You got anything about Mitchell?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised that he ended up getting an invite to the combine, and then it just sort of like any chatter on him fell away. He might just be a guy who just doesn't flash enough. And yeah, I feel like he's just going to be a guy who's probably going to have to prove himself as an undrafted free agent and find and see if he can carve out a role somewhere.
Mitchell and Burnett are half of opposite coins. Or maybe, no, half of the same. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
But two sides of the same coin?
Two sides of the same coin, sure. No, if you took Steven Mitchell's physical game and you gave it to Deontay Burnett, and you had Deontay Burnett's
production,
on-field maturity, in how he runs his routes and how smooth he is, all that kind of stuff, and you give that to Steven Mitchell, that's like a second or third rounder.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But Mitchell just doesn't... Mitchell has the huge injury red flags. He didn't have enough production.
Well, okay, when you give Deontay Burnett Steven Mitchell's physical gifts, you take out the injury proneness. You don't give him that gene.
Yeah, you definitely don't give him the injury proneness. But yeah, Mitchell will be a guy like not the same, but he'll be a guy like Darius Rogers, where you could see where you think you look at him and go like, if he ends up in the right place, he could be a guy who carves out a role. But as we're seeing with Darius Rogers, it doesn't necessarily always happen for these guys. So
let's talk about the offensive linemen. We'll put these guys together, Nico Falla and Vianney Talamaivo. Falla projected to go in the seventh round of the Packers, according to Charlie Campbell of WalterFootball.com. And Vianney is projected to be undrafted. So both those guys are kind of in the same boat. I mean, seventh round, undrafted, almost the same thing. But it's interesting because these are two guys who have... they're kind of similar to Deontay Burnett in the sense that their games are very strong technique-wise, I think. Maybe just lacking a little bit of the physical gifts, but they have qualities that you would like.
Yeah, they were productive college linemen. They did a good job, but I think they lack the flash or the spectacular kind of gifts that you look for. I think the comparison that I make is to last year where, you know, Chad Wheeler, you could argue, was a better offensive lineman for USC in 2016 than Zach Banner, but Zach Banner had the physical traits that people are looking for, so Zach Banner gets drafted and Chad Wheeler doesn't. Falla and Vianney Talamaivo are very much in the Chad Wheeler, Damian Mama, reasonable, good college guys, but just don't have enough going for them in all of the other things that NFL guys are looking for, which sort of I think was something that came up interestingly and on sort of a tweet exchange I was having with somebody from RainaTroy.com. I mean, on the RainaTroy Twitter account, where we were talking about how the question of will Neil Callaway come good essentially as an offensive line coach this year, and seeing more development from the offensive line, and those kinds of big questions that are circling around USC. And Todd Smith, who I was having this exchange with, had said something that stuck with me with regard to Falla and Talamaivo. He said, we were talking about how the schedule is tough, and he was saying that Tim Drevno should help with the offensive line. But just look at how many offensive linemen are high draft picks. That's not simply lack of development. And that stuck with me because I think it was an interesting point that you look at this year, USC's starting offensive linemen, they're not talked about in among, you know, the draftable players. We're talking fringe, Fala may get drafted. We're not talking like day two or day one kind of offensive linemen that USC is producing. Last year, USC has two All-American offensive linemen. Neither one of them are particularly highly drafted players. Banner goes in the fourth round on the physical assets that he has, but Wheeler doesn't get drafted. Mama doesn't get drafted. You go back, you know, a few years, USC's key offensive linemen, the key starters that USC has leaned on over the past, you know, 4 or 5 years, you think about it and you sort of look back at it and realize that none of them are prototypical NFL guys. None of them are guys that intrigue the NFL. None of them are guys that earn big draft accolades.
Well, and a lot of them were guys that moved around too. I mean, Turk played every position. Marcus Martin played guard and center. Colin Holmes played literally every position. These are guys that all moved around. And, you know, we were talking about this before you started recording about this question. And so, like, I put together the list of recruits. In the post-Pete Carroll era, so we're talking 2010 to 2018, those nine recruiting classes, USC has had one composite five-star offensive lineman, and that's Chuma Doga, who's still on the roster. And yet you go back to 1997. Since 1997, when SC had John Michaels, who was drafted in the first round, since then, SC has only had three first-round offensive linemen, Sam Baker, Tyron Smith, and Matt Khalil. Seven second-rounders, two third-rounders. So 12 guys in 22 drafts, 21, 22 drafts, whatever that is, in who would be considered day one or two guys. Yeah, SC doesn't have the steady stream of first-round talent. I think a lot of it comes down to geography in terms of the talent. So SC needs to find a way to develop the guys better. Because we've talked about it before, especially this 2018 class where there weren't any, if there's not a five-star offensive lineman in California, SC's got to go get him from the South or something. And look, where's Chuma Doga from? Georgia.
Yeah. But, I mean, you think about the guys that USC has targeted from Georgia, Chuma Doga comes in and there's this constant rumor mongering of, well, he's homesick or he wants to transfer away. EJ Price comes in from Georgia. He does transfer away. The recruiting issues with the offensive line are definitely complex. But, like, I have this sort of, like, chicken and egg kind of debate in my head about whether or not the lack of offensive line success as far as the draft is concerned for USC and USC's recruiting success along the offensive line, like, is it really that simple that USC needs to stop? Because USC has done a good job recruiting the offensive line. They get four-star guys and stock up with four-star guys all the time. But that lack of five-star guys, you look at the kinds of players that Stanford has been able to land over on the West Coast. Like, I feel like that's what USC needs to be doing. And that's going to be the kind of thing where USC won't be I have the feeling that USC won't be a national power on a consistent basis until we're talking about USC getting those five-star offensive linemen instead of Stanford. Building up a base of the offensive line where you are talking about day one, day two draft picks once they develop through your system. And you do have to develop them. Like Chuma Adoga, I don't know where he's going to get drafted next year. I think there's a reason he comes back because he must not have liked his draft evaluation. Like it's very much chicken and egg. USC needs to do a better job of recruiting the top level talent who will be high draft kind of guys. Ben, I know that you don't need, you can have success without having high draft picks at a lot of these positions, but the offense that USC runs, like, I feel like it is a reflection of the success of the offense if you're talking about highly draftable offensive linemen as a specific kind of thing.
Yeah, this is one of those situations where I think stars matter. And mind you, SC has gotten, like you said, their bevy of four-star guys. So it's not like SC's dealing with, you know, Oregon State-level talent or anything. But they got to take those four-star guys and make them, turn them into five stars. And that's what SC has not done. And by the way, we're talking about composite stuff. Because Damian Mama, by some services, was a five-star guy. Vianney at some point was a five-star guy. Austin Jackson was a five-star guy by some of them. But the composite, I think, kind of matters in this situation.
Yeah, but and at the same time, so then that's the chicken and egg kind of thing, where if USC is bringing in these fringe four-star, five-star guys and they're not getting drafted, then what does that say about USC's setup? Like that, I just think it's a conversation worth having because, and I don't necessarily have the answer to this. It's a query that I have. You know, where does the blame lie, I guess?
I think that's pretty easy.
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Literally, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, literally. Literally. Let's talk about the last couple of guys, Josh Fatu and Chris Hawkins, more than likely guys that will go undrafted, and hopefully they find a spot later this week, over the weekend. Don't want to just completely run by them, but I feel like we've talked about you know, the undrafted guys a little bit.
Yeah, really, really quick. Fatu, I don't think, was ever really an NFL projected kind of guy. And Hawkins, I'm a little bit surprised that he's not being talked about as a late round guy, but he is the sort of take the Deontay Burnett thing and move it to the extreme. He just doesn't have the physical assets that you're looking for. It's all in his brain. So he could make it in the NFL, but he's going to have to do it from outside the draft, I think.
Yeah, he's a hard worker, and we'll see if that works out for him. A little bit of other stuff we're going to talk about is the good old Todd McNair case and our takes on it coming up next. All right, Alicia, let's talk about my least favorite topic in the history of this podcast, the Todd McNair case against the NCAA. It has begun this week. They did jury selection last week. And this week, the opening statements have been heard. They are in the midst of the trial now. Fill us in on the latest about the Todd McNair case, or as USC fans are thinking of it, as the proxy USC versus the NCAA case.
Yeah, so they've done opening arguments and gotten into some of the gist of things. I think the biggest like headline grabber for me from the first day of the trial was the NCAA's lawyers like basically saying that the NCAA will take responsibility for the ways that they screwed up their investigation, which just my brain fell to the floor of disbelief. Like, okay, guys, sure, take responsibility. But really, like, I know that you don't care, Michael. I know that it's not something that I think that it's something that you want USC fans to move on from. But I did put on Twitter, Nathan Fenno of the LA Times was tweeting out some of the updates, and he said that McNair's lawyer pointed out how the committee on infractions proposed sanctions before it reached a decision on McNair's involvement in this, and it was supposed to be a 1-year postseason ban and the loss of 6 scholarships over 2 years. Then they found McNair guilty of unethical conduct, and USC's punishment came up to 2 years postseason ban and the loss of 30 scholarships over 3 years. That is a huge leap, and it's why I still care about the McNair trial, because to me it really did come down to the NCAA finding what they did on McNair. If McNair isn't involved in this, USC gets punished, but not close to the extent that USC did. It's not the death penalty attempt that it was.
Because he was the direct involvement.
He was the direct involvement, exactly. So I put this on Twitter. You know, it's a moral victory, but it still would feel like a victory if McNair is able to come out and get this win over the NCAA.
Let me just
finish off, put a little bow on the thing. It's a moral victory, and so you take that for what it is. It means nothing in a tangible sense.
It means jack shit.
It means nothing, but in a sort of in the validation of my righteous anger over the injustice of what happened with the NCAA and the way that they went about things, it would still, it still means something to me. It still, it would still mean something to me to have the legal system go through this process and find in favor of McNair, because it would validate all of that anger that I've had. And I know you're going to say, well, you're still going to have that anger and you're still valid and blah, 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 but
you're, no matter what happens, you're still going to have that anger. You're not going to feel more or less any validated. Trust me, it's going to happen. The only reason SC fans care about this is to feel good.
Yes. Yes. But that's literally, it's a moral victory.
It does nothing. It doesn't. Are the sanctions coming back? Nope. Is the bowl ban going to get remedied? Nope. Is SC going to fight this? Nope. Is SC involved in any way right now? Nope. Is anything going to stem from this that benefits USC? Nope. Nothing. Nothing. And this is a comparison that's uncomfortable to make, but I want to make it the point here. The Justice for the 96 movement was around for a long time. It still is.
Is around for a long time.
People died and they stuck with it. Nobody died here. You don't need to stick around scorned for, we're at 8 years now since the sanctions were handed out. It's time to move on. Nobody died. You don't need to fight for anyone's injustice at this point.
Here's
nothing is changing. Nothing is changing. And this whole moral victory thing is a giant crock of BS. And like I put on Twitter, you told me on Twitter that it's a moral victory because it'll be proven in court that, you know, SC was wronged. But that doesn't really mean anything. And it doesn't mean anything because if our judicial system has taught me anything, our justice system, if the political climate of today has taught me anything, it's that people believe what people want to believe. People don't believe what they don't want to believe. So if USC fans think that SC was screwed by the NCAA, and I think we can all agree about that, right? If that's the case, then those people are going to think that tomorrow and the next day, regardless of what happens in this case.
Yeah, but if...
And the same thing, you know, I saw someone tweeted me and said, well, this is about SC's reputation. The same thing is the inverse, though. Is some Ohio State fan who cracks jokes about Reggie Bush being a cheater, is he really going to change his tune because of this case? No.
But no. There will be a national... If McNair wins this lawsuit, there will be a national conversation.
The conversation has been happening.
But not specific to USC and not with the authority, the findings...
thing that was relevant about this case to USC was when all those documents leaked and all those emails leaked. When that happened, boom, that was the justification that SC fans needed, that the NCAA was morally corrupt.
There will be right now, but it's not about
nothing in this case that can make you feel better. And to me, this whole like hanging on every single day of the court, like, move on. It's been 8 years. Move on.
If you're going to the courtroom in
USC garb to watch this thing.
Okay, yeah, no, I agree. Like, I think that's too much.
Your priorities.
Let the people come out on Twitter and give us the updates from the trial. But I'm still interested in what gets said at the trial and how it all plays out. And you talk about how like people need to move on. I think this is the step to get people past it. Once the McNair stuff is settled, then I think the USC can do what you want them to do and put this in a little box and close it and put the bow on it and have everything on. But as long as the McNair stuff has been sitting out there.
It's not going to happen. You know why? Because McNair wins, then people will be like, well, now SC needs to go fight them. Well, that's not going to happen.
It will end because the McNair stuff won't be hanging over the head for 8 damn years.
It's not hanging over the head.
It's been hanging over the head for 8 years. Well, it doesn't affect.
Who's it hanging over the head of besides anyone but McNair?
It's because of the interest of what's going to happen with it. The intrigue is the resolution of the McNair trial will be a resolution of the whole saga of this whole thing. And I know you think it's dumb and you think it's irrelevant and doesn't have it hold
it's
any value.
It's a waste of time. It's a waste of time.
But it might be a waste of time. It might be a waste of time for
McNair
you, but that
get
doesn't
all
mean
the money that he should get.
he's going to get his money. But the point is that this thing has been out there. So basically, if McNair hadn't sued, yeah, sure, USC fans would still be pissed off. And we, you know, there would still be the conversations about how stupid the NCAA was and all that kind of stuff. But there wouldn't have been something tangible to cling to say, well, this
there already is tangible to cling to. The leaked emails. But that, that was the justification.
The leaked emails only happened because McNair sues. Because this whole saga happens where McNair is fighting this.
That was the winning moment in your walk away there.
Why? Because why is that the moment that it ends? There's depositions now with all of these people. There's
because you're
all sorts
never
of other
getting
stuff
anything
gonna,
out of this. That it's entirely masturbatory.
You know, no, what we're getting out of it is the NCAA's lawyers coming out and saying that they're going to take responsibility for the way that they screwed up the investigation. That's new.
Yeah, and what's that responsibility
going to
mean?
Well, it's dumb. Nothing. It's just another... I take the opportunity to mock the NCAA anytime I can.
Oh, yeah, Yeah, that'll make you really feel better. And then
but
how
I'm not looking to feel better because I know I won't. I just want to see this resolved. I want to see how it plays out.
You know what it comes back to me? And this is what I don't understand. We talked about in our Westwood on Westworld that you do not like characters that are irredeemable or characters that have motives that aren't for the greater good or whatever. And you said that you don't like, spoiler alert, sorry, if you're not into Westworld spoilers, pause it, move on, whatever. Just telling you right now that you don't like Dolores. That if she responds with vengeance, that you're not going to like Dolores as a character, as a rootable character, because an eye for an eye gets everybody blind, or whatever you said it was. How is rooting for McNair as a proxy USC thing not having the same intentions of that vengeance eye for an eye thing?
Because I'm not
putting nooses
around people's heads and standing them up on crosses and like letting them suffocate, like because it's not being cruel. It's not about cruel. What I don't like about Dolores is that there's a sense of cruelty in what she's doing. Just to expand on the Westworld stuff. What I'm saying about this is just.
No, but in her mind, she's getting. Vengeance and justification for what happened.
But it's not, this isn't about vengeance. Yes, it entirely is.
It's not about justification. Because if it was about justification, then people would have just moved on after the emails came out.
No, because the emails were only part of this process. The emails were a byproduct of the McNair process. I want to see the McNair process through to the end. I want to see how it ends. I'm interested to see how this story ends.
So you can get off at the verdict.
Michael,
that's all
Michael,
it is.
You want this? You say the story is over, but the story isn't over until the McNair lawsuit is complete. It's not. The story doesn't end until we put a bow on this on this thing that's going to
First
be going
of all, the
on
USC
in court.
Story was over a long time ago.
Because USC decided to not continue their story, but this is an adjacent story that involves
USC.
USC
is letting USC fans down, and the NCAA is letting USC fans down.
Yeah.
So why? Like, there's nothing to care
but
about.
But you're
move
looking
on.
At you're looking at it as on. Though there's something specific to gain. That's not my interest
because
in it.
Because there's nothing. To
I'm
gain.
Simply curious about how the story will end. There doesn't have to be
but
a point to it.
But that curiosity shouldn't be this unhealthy with vengeance
well,
and being like.
I'm not
like
unhealthy.
Giddy and, it's
you're
unhealthy.
You're the one bringing up Dolores and, like, you know, killing people and all
because,
that crap. Like,
because USC fans are like.
No,
the USC fans who are
going to the courthouse as though this is something to root for like it's a sporting event. Yes, I think they have an unhealthy obsession with this. But the casual, I would like to see how this happens. I'm glad that there's media reporting of it. Like, I don't think that's unhealthy at all.
I'm not
it's
saying there
curiosity.
Shouldn't be media reporting. There should be
well,
media
then,
reporting.
Okay, there's media reporting. So why can't USC fans follow along with the media reporting?
They should have better things to do, like be worried about the quarterback situation. Things that actually matter.
I can do both, Michael. It's called multitasking.
Like I said in our last episode, worrying about this is like watching your ex and like having a strong opinion about an ex from 10 years ago. Because that's all it is. That's all it is. It's having a strong opinion about an ex 10 years ago. 90% to get that moment where you say, I knew I was right.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
And that's literally just being a human being because that trope exists for a reason. This is
because,
what people do with their exes.
You shouldn't be hung up on an ex from 10 years ago.
many, many, many people are hung up on exes
many,
from
many,
10
many
years
people
ago.
Need to,
part of,
need to move
it's
on.
It's part of the
adults.
Human condition, Michael.
People need to be an adult and move on.
You're fighting the human condition here, and I'm just embracing my
I'm all about
natural
lowering
curiosity
stress.
About this.
Lowering stress. There's a million things to stress out about. There's no need to be stressed out over this
but
thing.
But see, you're projecting stuff, though, because I'm not stressed about the McNair stuff. No one is stressed out about the McNair stuff. They're just interested in it.
The energy invested in it. Okay, energy.
But
let's use the word energy.
But I think you're overblowing the energy. Like, the energy to send off a tweet saying that I'm interested in this is very minimal. Extremely
caring,
minimal.
Caring takes energy.
I mean, the caring enough to send a tweet saying I'm interested in this or reacting to something that I see from a reporter who's on the scene, like, very minimal energy. It's not infringing on my life.
Being okay about a news story is one thing. Like, having to follow this thing word for word is
Michael,
just absurd.
I spent more time reading about the Halifax disaster because you mentioned it on Twitter than I have spent
Holy
reading
crap. Can we talk
about
the Halifax explosion?
Let's save it for right after dark. I mean, for the after dark. Let's talk about the Halifax disaster on after dark.
All right. That'll be a perfect segue, which leads us to a preview of our robot's choice. Our robot's choice is the five things we're most looking forward to and least looking forward to in the 2018 season. You know how to follow us on Reign of Troy and Facebook and all that stuff. Subscribe to us on Patreon. If you like this free Robot's Choice episode from our Patreon, then you should be a perfect candidate to sign up for our Patreon, patreon.com/Reign of Troy. So here's that preview, and we'll see you later. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
It is Robot's Choice time, a Reign of Troy Patreon exclusive.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Reign of Troy Radio. This is a Robot's Choice episode coming to you exclusively on Patreon. We are going to talk about the five things we are looking forward to most this college football season and the five things we are least looking forward to this college football season. As always, follow us on social media and all that stuff, and Patreon, where you're already involved, patreon.com/Reign of Troy. I'm your host, Mario Castillo, joined along with my co-host, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Alicia. We put out a call for Robot's Choice suggestions, and we got one from Top Trojan Fan. I thought that we should give it a look-see. He says, I say we have a looking forward episode where you guys give the top five things you are looking forward to this season. It can be a new player arriving, a matchup against a rival, tailgating, perhaps even getting some Texas brisket. So basically, just whatever you're excited about for this upcoming season. Alicia, I thought this was a great idea, so naturally, we're twisting it a little bit. We're going to do the five things that we're looking forward to most, like he suggested, but also the five things we're not looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, immediately when I saw this suggestion, part of me wanted to do some things I sarcastically am looking forward to. So it kind of works out that we're also including the things that we're not looking forward to, because unfortunately, a lot of those were the first things that popped in my head. But this way we have a little bit more content to work with here, and maybe less overlap. We were worried that maybe there would be overlap between the things that we're looking forward to. But honestly, I actually think there's going to be very little overlap. I think we might be coming at this from different perspectives. So we'll see.
Hopefully. I'd like to do that thing where I go in one way and then I start putting in my answers. And I'm like, no, I'm going to tweak them. And then they're completely different. Then we end up not agreeing on things. So maybe that's what will happen here. But I say we start with the things we're not looking forward to.
Yeah.
Why don't you go first?
I'm least looking forward to, this is number five, so this is the least of my least looking forward to ones. And that's just the inevitable injury crush that USC is going to feel.
That's a good one.
It's inevitable. It's going to happen. It's probably going to happen like right before the Notre Dame game, which is going to suck. But at some point during the season, there will be a week when I'm just sort of going to look at the lineup and go, how on earth is USC going to field a team? Because it always happens. And maybe that'll be the interesting thing this year, is how badly will it happen? Because USC's depth is certainly looking much better in a lot of places, but there are still some thin areas on the team. So basically, I'm sitting here going, like, how long until all of USC's tight ends are injured? And I'm sitting over here in the corner crying because of it.
Yeah, that's always an inevitable thing, especially before the Notre Dame game, like you mentioned. I mean, I always think of 2013. A lot of guys got hurt in that Notre Dame game. Morgan Breslin, Lamar Dawson got hurt right after that game in practice. Justin Davis got hurt that year. Silas Red was hurt on and off that year. Marquise Lee was hurt on and off that year. And then you look at last year, all those guys on defensive line before the Notre Dame game was definitely an issue. So yeah, that's a good one to have on your thing not to look forward to, because you never want to root for injuries.
Never. And they always come, and you just sort of have to hope that they're spread out enough and that they're in positions where you have players to be able to cope with it. But unfortunately, injuries are never that kind. So.
Well, the good thing is, this is kind of a foreshadowing to one of the things I'm looking forward to. It's kind of this idea. We'll get to that a little bit later. Oh. I don't want to completely spoil it.
Interesting.
Anyway, so let's get to my number five on the things I'm looking forward to. Number five, USC social media department overusing a hashtag.
Oh, what is it going to be this year?
It's going to be fight on with 18 in the fight on.
I really don't like that.
You know, F18THTON.
Yeah. It's not even the most cringy, like, I have to pigeonhole this year into a word kind of thing that USC's done.
What I hate about it is this one is too obvious to use.
Yeah.
So they're going to use it. They're going to use it a lot, I would imagine. I know they're used it around signing day. I was just looking on their Twitter account. They haven't used it lately, but I feel like it's going to be something that's going to be used pretty heavily. And then I just look back at the ones. I mean, the whole turn up USC thing was
that
annoying.
Was so bad.
Believe with the Barkley seven in there was annoying.
Yeah, that was also cursed. But I mean, okay, so am I weird that I generally don't like
Any sports teams using the hashtags.
Like, I don't like the way that recruiting guys in particular, like, I don't like the way that they refer to teams. So, like, they'll refer to USC as hashtag fight on. And that, like, annoys the crap out of me.
They're using the idea of this is the official hashtag.
Yeah.
So I need to use it. But it's stupid because, first of all, you know the amount of people that search that hashtag?
Yeah. Who's actually,
incredibly
like, searching
small.
That?
Incredibly small.
There are other teams that have these hashtags that, like, mean something to them. But I also have no idea what, like, so, you know, it's not the same thing. But, like, if you were a casual college sports fan and you went on Twitter and you saw people, like, hashtagging or adding win the day, like, you wouldn't know that they were referring to Oregon. Like, and because I can't think of, like, the ones that stump me at the moment. It's a lot of, like, SEC teams and, like, random teams, but, like,
or it's like Liverpool's Yana. Same thing with your Yana.
Oh, well, but so again, I would hate if somebody was using that to, like, if they were saying, like, you know, Nabi Keita is gonna join hashtag YNWA, like, No, he's going to join Liverpool. Like, say Liverpool. Like, it's fine if you want to put hashtag Liverpool.
Well,
but
I hate the MLB ones and the NFL ones and the NHL ones because these leagues pay Twitter to have the little emoji thing.
Yeah.
And which is the team logo. So the Dodgers this year is just hashtag Dodgers. That's what it should be.
Yeah.
But yet, like, last year, the Dodgers was this team. So if anyone said hashtag this team, it would pop up the Dodgers logo.
I hate that.
And then, like, this year, the Cubs is everybody in. Like, I can understand everybody in being a slogan for the year, but it shouldn't be the official hashtag and the only thing that generates a Cubs logo. If I put hashtag Cubs, that should have the Cubs logo on it.
Yes, 1,000%.
Like, I can understand, like, the Mets people wanting to put LGM for Let's Go Mets. Okay, fine. I get it. But, like...
Yeah, but if I saw that tweet, I wouldn't know that that LGM means anything, but, like,
but
what does LGM mean?
If you saw it with the little Mets logo...
Either way, I generally don't like social media, like, the usage. I am not here for social media shenanigans when it comes to slogans
and to me, the fight on with the 18 in it is just going to be so ripe. Be so ripe.
Yeah.
USC will use it and then fans will use it and then...
Like, what's wrong with just hashtag
prepared.
Fight on?
Nothing.
What's wrong with hashtag fight on?
All right. What's your number four on your things you're not looking forward to?
All right. Things I'm not looking forward to. This is slightly mirroring something that I am looking forward to, but the sort of, like, a lot of things that I'm looking forward to have a flip side of, like, the negative of them.